Today on the Illini Inquirer podcast, Kyle Toss joins me to break down Illinois basketball's non-conference schedule. What a schedule it is. Yes, I know there's no marquee home game for Illinois, but boy, there's five huge high-major opponents. I have Kyle Toss rank those from order of most intriguing to least intriguing, but they're all really intriguing. And then we talk about the three non-conference exhibition games that Illinois has, including a home exhibition against Baylor and a road trip to Cincinnati. But Kyle and I also talk about Illinois basketball recruiting four five-star prospects visiting Illinois this fall. We break that all down for you next on the Illini Inquirer podcast. Welcome into the Illini Inquirer podcast. It is Jeremy Warner and Kyle Tosk with you. Back to basketball pods on the Illini Inquirer podcast. I had Michael Tuop last week talking about the summer buzz and the news out of the summer, especially David Mirkovich's injury. But today, Kyle, let's look forward to the fall and the winter a little bit, shall we? Talk a little bit about the non-conference schedule, which was announced officially over Friday, over the weekend. And then, of course, we have a lot of recruiting stuff to get over. But first, Kyle Toss, that's a new backdrop, buddy. Do we got news?
Yeah, I'm officially back in Champaign here. I've upgraded the setup quite significantly from what I had over the summer and back at my old place when I was still in school. So yeah, we've definitely upgraded here. Excited to be back in town and inching closer to basketball season.
And what I love about the Zoom era is we get to learn a little bit about everybody. Like behind me, you can see the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the wrestlers, some cards. By the way, that's a lot of the former Illini players I've covered that have been drafted. That's what those cards are. I see a lot of Cubs stuff, of course. See some press passes. What else you got back there?
Yeah, I got the above my head, I got the 2020-21 poster. That's kind of one I've had since that season. That was the kind of my team. That was when I was a junior in high school, Io Kofi, that breakthrough Brad Underwood squad. But yeah, we got some Cubs stuff over here, of course. Got my old school Miami Dolphins helmet, just to get a little hint of that in there. But yeah, we got some Illini stuff, some books here. Got a brick from the old Chicago Stadium. That's nice. Kind of an odd little piece that I got. I got that as a gift a few years ago from one of my uncles. So yeah, that's we've awesome. Just trying to get a little bit of flavor of a lot of different things back there.
By the way, I'm not mad at you for the Cubs for stealing that series last week. Just a phenomenal baseball series, first of all. You guys have a really good team, and I just felt like, hey, my team belongs, which I kind of have thought like they can compete. I don't think they can go too far in the playoffs because of our pitching, but that was a fun baseball series at Wrigley, even though it was heartbreaking for me.
It was awesome. The atmosphere was absolutely awesome, too, at Wrigley. I mean, it felt pretty split. Like, yeah, yes, the Cubs probably had a little bit of an advantage there, but it was like 60-40, maybe. White Sox fans really showed out there. It felt like, for the first time in a while, both teams were relevant, both fan bases were in it. And the season series was 3-3, and I think the run differential was like one run. So a pretty even series overall on the year. That was definitely fun, and we'll see if maybe the off chance could occur that we meet again in late October. I'm not expecting it this year, but hey, no. Maybe one of these years we can get that, because that would be absolutely electric.
Hey, it's just fun that series matters again, and that baseball matters on both sides of town and for both fan bases. Gets things a little more interesting for Central Illinois. Obviously, the Cardinals-Cubs thing always heats up as well, but to have all three of them at least winning teams right now is definitely fun. But Kyle, it's good to have you in Champaign, man. Part of the real world in Champaign. All the students moving in, are they bothering you yet now? Now that you're not one of them, they really flood campus this time of year.
No, it feels weird. Like today is the first day of school, and me not having to worry about a first day of school, which was always like the dreaded time of year. I mean, once you get into it, you start enjoying yourself, especially when I was in college. But like that first day of school dread feeling wasn't quite the same this year. And now I've moved a little bit off campus. I've been living on campus the last 4 years, so I'm not really immersed in the campus traffic anymore. I'll obviously be back on campus plenty being here. I'm not far from it, but it definitely is a different feeling this August than it has been in what, 17 years or something for me. So I got to get used to it, but I'm fired up about the year ahead, my first year as actually a real working adult for the first time.
Well, let's put you to work then, shall we? Since you're not in school, let's put you to work. Today, we're going to talk about the non-conference schedule. We'll talk about now three exhibition games on the schedule, some actual mid-major tests on the schedule this year, and then, of course, the five high major games. I'm going to have Kyle rank the high major games here, and we'll just kind of grade the non-conference schedule, how they put it together overall. But first, I feel like it's time to talk about this schedule of visitors they have coming up for the fall here, Kyle, because so far, Illinois has 4 5-star composite prospects set to visit campus this fall. Just saw Deshaun London put out that Quentin Kitt, the 4-star commit, also going to take his official visit. I would imagine Mason Martin will have an official visit at some point as well. So we know Illinois has already got that in-state start to the class. But boy, I think the major takeaway with Navarro Bowman, Musa Kamisoko, Brady Pettigrew, Darius Wobbington, all those guys coming to campus, Kyle, with a couple guys already committed, they are shooting high. And why would you not? After going to a Final Four, after having a top five pick in the draft, after having 2 1-and-dones a year prior, Illinois should be shooting high for these 5-stars now at this point.
Yeah, no doubt. They're shooting high. They're swinging big to try and land a big fish, particularly in the class of 2027, but 2028 as well. They've been starting to get more active there. But yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. And Illinois has put itself in a position now with the success they've had coming off of Final Four, the NBA development that they've now produced over multiple years and of a high quantity. Like they can be a factor in these battles too. They're not just offering and hoping. Like they can be a factor in these battles, of course, some more than others. I think when you look at the official visitors that they'll have this fall, I think you look at the two guards, Navarro Bowman Jr. and Brady Pettigrew, who Pettigrew obviously still in 2028. We've talked about probably going to end up in the class of 2027, I would anticipate, come next spring. I think you look at those two guys, and those feel like the top of the board for Illinois, and that guard spot has kind of been the primary focus in that class. I think in terms of how hard Illinois ultimately will push and what those decisions will look like, probably not going to get as much clarity on that until we figure out what the future might hold for the current backcourt, because there's a lot of different scenarios of what Stephen Vox and Quentin Coleman can do. But that feels like the top of the board. But we're seeing Illinois, Darius Wobbington removed Kentucky from his final six and inserted Illinois into it's going to take an official visit. That means that he is interested in what Illinois has to say and is interested in exploring Illinois as an option, even if Illinois is probably kind of coming in from behind in that battle. And makes sense, a really skilled big man with the success that Illinois has had in this offense to go after, shoot your shot on a guy like that. Musa Kamisoko, a really skilled, long, athletic wing in the class of 2027. Why not swing big in these battles, because you belong in them and you actually can gain some traction and be a real factor in them? And we're starting to see that for Illinois, particularly in 2027.
And by the way, you can see at the bottom of our screen, 60% off VIP. One of the great things about VIP members, you get to be part of our board. And all of these visitors coming around, people are like, what are the odds you think Illinois gets a 5-star? And I sit there and go, Kyle, I'd be pretty confident if you have 4 guys who are taking an official visit, Illinois probably has a decent chance of landing at least one. I think we'd look at the backcourt, especially with their sell there. If one of Coleman or Vox moves on, I would kind of bet on that for Illinois with their guard development and the roles those guys are going to play. But think of it, the last couple classes, Quentin Coleman, 5-star, you got him, right? 2 years ago, Will Riley, 5-star, you got him. Like, Illinois is at that point where they have the development for the NBA, they have the winning, they have the pedigree now to win big games and to play big games, and then three, they have the resources to get the guys that are 5-stars. And in the next class, Kyle, given all they're going to lose at center, potentially in the backcourt, on the wing, they have a lot of playing time to sell. They need really good players. And I think Illinois has got a pretty decent sell for all those guys.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of different things that can happen between now and next spring in terms of the roster. 5-for-5 has thrown an interesting element into that, because what does Andre Stojakovic do if he has a fifth year? And kind of what the timeline looks like for certain guys. But yeah, you're going to lose both centers, and so it makes sense. We're starting to see Illinois is getting involved with more big men on the high school recruiting front. I would anticipate that they're going to add an experienced option, at least one, if not multiple experienced options as well, whether that comes from the transfer portal or from overseas.
Yeah, it was weird. It was weird today. Sorry to interrupt you, Kyle, but it was weird today. Just to throw this thought in. You saw the list of international players coming into college today that Adam Finkelstein put out, a top 10. It's weird not seeing an Illinois guy there, but that's because all their international guys basically stayed this year.
Right. And I think Illinois will be on that list probably next offseason if I had to make a bet right now in some way or another and moving forward. But, yeah, you're going to have to replace both centers. Illinois believes that they're going to have to replace their power forward after the year that they think he can have in Davin Mirkovic. That means you're going to rebuild an entire front court. So to go after a guy like Darius Wobbington, who's I think fits Illinois perfectly, makes sense to try and get in the mix there. But yeah, in the backcourt, like Stefan Vaux could be a first-round NBA draft pick. Quentin Coleman could be a first-round NBA draft pick. Now, maybe you could get one or both of those guys back as well, but there's a pretty good likelihood that at least one of those guys will leave. And Illinois, with the guard success that they've had and the NBA development that they've had, why not shoot as high as possible in trying to bring a really high upside, high ceiling player in? That's what Navarro Bowman Jr. and Brady Pettigrew could be. I think Illinois has shown a willingness now to enter these big time battles, to be a factor in these. And I think for them, like it makes sense to kind of build from all areas, and we're seeing that, whether internationally, from the transfer portal, from the freshman ranks. Illinois is hitting everything in trying to build a roster. I think you have to have the right mix of everything, as we see with this current roster, the continuity, but also adding the high level talent wherever you can get it. And Illinois has made themselves a factor for some really, really good players in 2027. And to get four guys on campus for prime football weekends in the fall is a really big deal.
With sellout crowds now. Like, those guys bring them to campus for those official visits. It used to be pretty sparse, and I don't know how big of a sell it was. Now, it's a big sell. Going through Grange Grove, I know having those recruits go through there is a pretty big deal and leaves an impression. I don't want to say like who's the most important one, but I think the most intriguing ones here, let's start with the backcourt, right? Like Brady Pettigrew from Bolingbrook. There's the intrigue of, does he reclassify or not? I would imagine with the official visits happening this fall and spring semester, I think that kind of says he's leaning towards that way. He's number 18 overall prospect in the class of 2028 right now. I think he'd still be a five-star in the class of 2027. He's an older prospect as it is. Obviously very physical kid already for his age, but he's visiting on October 2nd. His other visits, Kyle, Michigan, Florida, Ohio State, and Arkansas. He is a top priority for the staff. What intrigues you about that pursuit?
He's a stud. He's a really, really good player. Got to see him earlier in the summer, and he can just take over games with his athleticism, with his explosiveness. Ultra aggressive as a scorer. I played on 16U. I thought maybe he could have played up on the UIBL circuit, but he dominated 16U this summer for Brad Beal Elite. He was the 16U MVP at the end of the summer, was awesome at Peach Jam, second leading scorer on UIBL. Like, he can take over as an offensive player. He's got the physical tools to match. I think he absolutely can step in a year from now to college basketball and be really productive. He's already that age as well. So I think that's a foregone conclusion at this point, especially he had been enrolled in summer school when I talked to him over the summer. As you said, he's taking the visits. I think this is a 2027 pursuit for Illinois and others as they're going after him. But yeah, he'd be an immediate plug and play starter as a freshman, no doubt. I think he'd have an opportunity to potentially be a one and done in college. And he's a guy that would really raise your ceiling in the backcourt. And he's combo guard. He handles the ball some. He's shown improvement as a playmaker. His feels pretty good, but he's a score first guard. He's a bucket getting guard. And Illinois could lose a lot of scoring heading into next year. So to add a guy who can come in and maybe be one of your top three scorers immediately as a freshman, which I think he could project to be at the Big Ten, would be really intriguing. And it seems very clear at this point that Illinois will be in this one until the end. Brady came out and said that himself to me, like, Illinois is going to be there to the end with me. Illinois has recruited him really hard. The relationship's really strong. The in-state sell is meaningful to him. So, yeah, this is one that will be one Illinois fans should closely monitor entering this fall and then next spring. This is one I think Illinois will be heavily involved with there. But Arkansas and some of these other programs, this is one that there's some good suitors here that Illinois will have to battle.
Yeah, John Calipari, pretty good guard sell for him over the last, several decades here. Navarro Bowman, number 11 overall prospect, is visiting on September 10th. Other visits include UConn, Texas, and Arizona. Yes, he's the son of the NFL linebacker, who's very, very good. Obviously, the athleticism is there. Two-way ability really stands out with him, with his defense, Kyle. But what intrigues you there in their pursuit?
Yeah, another score first guard, another really aggressive scoring guard. Guy whose his efficiency's been up and down, but when he gets going, when he gets on a heater, man, the shot making is as good as maybe anybody in 2027. Like the difficulty of shots he can hit, the way he can create for himself. There were some games he had this summer on the UIBL circuit for Team Why Not where he just could really fill it up. I think he was fourth on the 17U circuit and scoring, averaging over 20 points a game. Just an electric scorer, can do it from all three levels. The three-point shot is inconsistent, but again, if he gets going, he can really hit those in a hurry. But like you said, he's got good size, 6'3", good length. The two-way upside is really intriguing there because he's really, really competitive defensively and has the athleticism. So just another guy that I think his ceiling is humongous. I think he's absolutely has a one and done ceiling and can be an immediate starter and contributor in the Big Ten. Has to smooth some things out with his offensive game. I think he can improve as well as a guy who can make others better coming up here during his senior year as he develops that. But he is a dynamic scorer and another guard who I think you plug him into your backcourt and you feel pretty good about that because I think he'll score a lot of points in the Big Ten.
Musa Kamisoko, number 20 overall in the class, September 18th is his visit to Illinois, one of nine official visits. That would get tiring, but Florida State, Syracuse, Virginia, Oklahoma State, BYU, there's UConn again, Louisville, and Baylor, and then Darius Wobbington. As you said, Illinois knocked Kentucky out of his top six. They'll get an official visit on October 23rd, but talk about a list of contenders here. Arizona, Indiana, Louisville, North Carolina, and Texas, who's going to be one of the top teams probably in the country this year, and obviously has a lot of resources behind it with Archie Miller there. So out of those two guys, what stands out for you, Kyle?
Yeah, Kamisoko is one that has a ton of offers. He's had a ton of interest, and he's going to explore a lot of different options. Obviously, Illinois getting a visit there is significant, but to your point, there's nine official visits coming there. I know UConn and Louisville have been two that seem like they've been pretty aggressive on that one. But, really skilled wing, 6'7", 6'11" wingspan, another two-way player. Guy I think has some really big defensive upside as well. So that'll be one to watch. Not sure how deep Illinois is there, but to get a visit is definitely something to note. I think Darius Wobbington, Arizona kid, and Arizona has been really strong there. So I feel like that's probably the hill that a lot of these other schools will have to climb. But it's a big deal to knock Kentucky out of his final six, get in there to get a visit. And the fit for a guy like Darius Wobbington, who is an extremely skilled 6'11" big man, think he projects probably as a center at the next level, because I question, he's not super athletic, not super quick. Wonder if he can hold up defensively at the four, but really skilled, starting to develop more of a three-point shot, develop to be more of a floor spacer, but his IQ is extremely high. He can really pass it. He's averaged over two assists at every level he's played. This summer, he was really initiating offense on the 3SSB circuit for Compton Magic and starting to get more comfortable doing that. Also played with Quentin Coleman on the FIBA U18 team at the AmeriCup and was up and down there, but you could see some of the skill, and I think he was fourth in assists on the roster. So makes a ton of sense why Illinois would like him like that. It just fits everything that they like at the center spot. They love having these hub-like big men, these secondary facilitators that they can play through in different ways, and that's what Wobbington projects at. So it's definitely significant that Illinois has generated enough traction here to get the visit and to sneak in late to his top six. I think Arizona would be the one that I would circle of, like, you got to take them down. They seem to be in a pretty strong position, but Illinois has a heck of a sell for guys with that skill set in this offense. I think in terms of trying to get the most out of a guy like that, Illinois is a pretty intriguing spot, and clearly Wobbington agrees with that and wants to at least explore that.
As I take a 30,000-foot view of all of this, Kyle, like, I'm sorry, I'm getting up there in age, so everything has perspective for me. When Derek and I first started Illini Inquirer, it was like living and dying by these recruiting wins. I sit there and go, yeah, this is fun to talk about, fun to think about, but I have no concerns like of roster building when it comes to this staff at this point, with the resources Illinois has, the development, all those things we talked about, where the program's at. It's like they're going to put together a talented roster. I think you'd love to have Brady Pettigrew stay in state, right? But you feel like you're going to find a good guard no matter where you're looking. You don't have to get a Jackson Davis. You can go find a Quentin Coleman and bring him in here, and he's higher ranked. So that's what's interesting about all this to me, is just the confidence I think everyone should have in this staff's ability to get talent. But they are going to have to replace, most likely, a lot of really good talent, especially in that front court, even if Mirkovic were to come back for another year, to lose both Ivicic twins. But you could bring Stojakovic and Davis back. You could bring Quentin Coleman and Stefan Vox back. But given what the staff's been able to do in this offense, I would imagine they're losing some guys early, which is a good problem to have.
For sure. And I think you're kind of seeing that in the approach here, too. It's not an all-out blitz at this point on the high school recruiting trail, and it really isn't for a lot of programs, because it's just kind of the way the calendar has changed now with so much uncertainty. A lot of guys commit in the spring now because it makes sense for both sides to wait that long, because
it's a great point to bring up.
Look like.
It's a great point to bring up that resources. Like, we should not expect these guys to make decisions right away, right? Like, right. Fans should not expect. So sorry to interrupt, Kyle, but I just wanted, it's a great point that, like, these guys probably spring decisions because they're all five-star prospects.
Right. And I would expect, like, for all of these guys, like, they're going to make their rounds on the official visit tour in the fall. It's not going to be a situation where you should be expecting a commitment coming out of any of these visits. I think you go through the process in the fall, you kind of reassess come the winter and the spring as there becomes a lot more clarity with these programs in terms of who could come back, who they might lose, what the resources are going to look like, how much are you willing to allocate to a freshman versus want to allocate to retention and allocate to the transfer portal or to the overseas market. Like, all of these things are things I don't think Illinois has a very clear picture of today. I think that'll become clearer. But right now you want to obviously get as many guys on campus as you can, be in strong with as many guys as you can, and then just kind of let it play out into the spring once you get more clarity on that. And I think, to your point, like, there should be a lot of confidence that whatever the situation ends up being for Illinois, they're going to have really good options. They're going to find a way to add high level talent. None of these guys are going to make or break their 2027 roster. I think a lot of them would be really good additions, ceiling raising additions, but you know, we've seen there's no one high school recruit now that is going to make or break Illinois. And we might, you know, there might be names that, you know, we're not even talking about right now that come back up come next spring, like Quentin Coleman did this past year. And now he's going to be one of your most important players. So it is kind of a slower, more wait and see type of process here. But to be involved with guys like this is definitely a big deal for Illinois. And you hope to remain involved heading into the spring and then see where things take you from there.
The only thing I'd kind of push back on is like freshmen have been so important to Illinois the last couple of years. They're kind of leaning back into it, right? Like, I mean, this year, not as much, but Quentin Coleman is a huge part of the team. Obviously, Keaton Wagner, they did not expect that, but he became the hub of the team, and David Mirkovich as well. And then, of course, Will Riley and Kasper Siakashonis. So obviously, they want to balance it out. But I would say, like, for all these guys, they can sell, we play freshmen and we empower them right away. That has certainly been the case the last 3 or 4 years. And obviously you can go back to Io and Kofi when they had no other choice, but now, like, freshmen are a huge part of this program.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the sell to freshmen is great. And I do think Illinois puts a lot of value still, as we've seen here in some of the recruiting activity, in recruiting high level freshmen and just recruiting freshmen in general. But I think it's, you know, it just every year is different. Yeah. And so, like, Quentin Coleman probably wouldn't be on this team if Keaton Wagler didn't have the unexpected season that we could not. We were sitting down in August of last year. We were talking about Keaton Wagler. Is he going to get minutes? Not is he going to be the number 5 overall pick in the draft? And if that doesn't happen, then Quentin Coleman probably isn't on Illinois and isn't a starter, and maybe you're not starting any freshmen. And, you know, Kasper Siakashonis was a guy who, and Will Riley especially, was a guy, like, early in the summer that opportunity kind of presented itself. I don't think going into the process that was a situation where Illinois was like, yeah, we need to target a freshman for this spot. So I think Illinois has shown a willingness to make freshmen a big part of what they do. But I think every year and every roster is going to be different. And so we just don't know. We don't have a lot of answers right now to what 2027 could look like. I think there's absolutely a scenario where a guy like Brady Pettigrew and Navarro Bowman Jr. is one of your more important guys heading into that season. But, you know, it could be a situation where Illinois gets one or both of these guards back, and maybe you go heavier into experience, into the transfer portal or into overseas, and that's kind of how you build it that year while you bring some of these younger guys from this bigger freshman class on. We just don't know yet, so I think it's hard to kind of project that right now. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Illinois has shown that freshmen are a big part of how they build rosters and also a big part of their success. So that should carry forward here with this class.
And the biggest thing is, if you're bringing guys like David Mirkovich, Quentin Coleman, and Stefan Vox or Andre Stojakovic back, probably isn't money for these guys, right? Because those guys are going to be very, very expensive. So it's another, yes, it's going to take until March, April, where we really know where this roster will be going based on how those guys played, where they're projected to go in the NBA draft. Testosterone naturally starts dipping for a lot of guys as early as their 30s, even ones who are already fit and active. It's not really about how hard you're training. It's about whether your hormones are keeping up with it. Lower T can mean flatter energy, slower recovery, and a harder time building the muscle you're actually working so hard for. If that sounds like you, you should check out Mars Men. It's a natural supplement designed to support healthy testosterone levels, which can help your body burn fat more efficiently and build lean muscle. Basically, helping things run the way they did years ago. No weird stimulants, no synthetic hormones, just real ingredients. It's made in the USA, third-party tested, and you actually find it at GNC nationwide now. When you take it, your energy will feel way more consistent. Lifts feel stronger. Recovery is better. And honestly, there's zero risk in trying. They back it with a 90-day money-back guarantee, and over 91% of users report higher energy levels. Check the reviews on the site. Thousands of guys are seeing real results. For a limited time, our listeners at Illini Inquirer get 50% off for life, free shipping, and 3 free gifts if you go to mengotomars.com. That's mengotomars.com for 50% off and 3 free gifts at checkout. And when they ask where you heard about them, tell them Illini Inquirer sent you.
All right, we do have the official non-conference schedule for Illinois basketball. We've known most of these, but we did get some exhibition stuff that is new to all of us. So the schedule as laid out, let's start here, Kyle, because we knew that Illinois was going to play UConn and Missouri and North Carolina, Texas Tech and Duke. But the biggest news out of this schedule release was the 3 exhibition games, which is a new rule in college basketball. basketball. You can play three, not just two, and that all of these will be public. No closed scrimmage like there was last year with Florida. Illinois will play at Cincinnati on October 17th as a scrimmage, kind of get that road game, and then you get Baylor at the State Farm Center. So that's probably the marquee game of this entire non-conference, even though it's not a regular season game. And then UIC, the sister school, comes down to the State Farm Center on October 28th for the exhibition schedule. So, Kyle, what did you make of the exhibition slate for Illinois there?
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see them load up with three public exhibition games. I figure you get three preseason games, you should probably use that opportunity to play three. What can it hurt you? But we've seen the last 2 years that Illinois has elected to play one closed-door scrimmage, and this year they're going to go with three public exhibitions. So that was interesting to me. I think it's awesome for the fans. It's awesome for us, and it's awesome for the pockets of these programs as well, too, to do these public exhibition games. I'm sure they'll be televised in some capacity.
And I wonder how much Brad was like, man, we don't have a marquee home game. We got to give them Baylor in front of them. And instead of – we'll have to ask him that. We haven't talked to Brad in a little bit, but right. I wonder if he was like, we got to give the fans – something since we don't have a marquee home non-conference game.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that the environment for that exhibition is going to be pretty great because it'll be on a Friday night, the day before Illinois football hosts Oregon on Saturday. So that can be a pretty fun weekend there. That'll be a good one. You get two high major teams. I don't think either of them are going to be spectacular teams. I don't think either of them are going to be ranked in the preseason top 25, but I think both could be NCAA tournament teams. Cincinnati will be an interesting one because they're replacing their entire roster. They have literally zero returners from last season's roster. New head coach Jared Calhoun from Utah State trying to bring his star player from last year, MJ Collins's point guard, who is currently in a eligibility battle. We'll see what ultimately happens there. A fifth-year eligibility guy potentially, but totally built out of the portal, kind of an unknown of a team. That'll be a really important test for them as well, getting Illinois at home to kind of see where they're at. But Baylor will be really interesting to me because I think their backcourt could be really, really good. They got the Mingo brothers. Caden Mingo transferred from Penn State, was great for Penn State last year. Dylan Mingo, five-star freshman guard. That'll be really interesting for Illinois. That'll be a good test for them. Those are two really good guards. Like, yeah, let's throw Quentin Coleman on one of those guys in the preseason in a game that doesn't count and see how he does. Let's test Stephen Vox against those guys in a preseason game. Let's test this Illinois defense against what could be a really, really good backcourt, which is a big question that we have. How well can Illinois defend the perimeter, defend explosive guards? I think Baylor's a pretty good test for that at home. So I'll be interested to watch that game. I think we can learn some things. And UIC, too, is an interesting one. UIC could be a really good team this year. They were the runner-up in the Missouri Valley last year. They bring back four of five starters and add three former high major transfers. So that could be a fun one. I'd expect Illinois probably wins that game, but that'll be a fun little tune-up game, last tune-up before the regular season there. So, it makes a lot of sense for Illinois. Let's get as many reps as possible. Let's get our depth as many reps as possible. Like, these are games you can play a lot of your freshmen, throw them into the fire, get them valuable experience, See where they're at. Throw guys into different roles. I would anticipate that David Mirkovich will probably be limited, if not out, for this preseason slate. So that's a good opportunity to kind of mix guys into different roles. Maybe if David is working his way back, this would be an opportunity to kind of lightly get him his feet underneath.
That'll be the biggest storyline. Kyle, by the way, we're sending you to Cincinnati. It'll be middle of football season, so you got that one covered. That'll be the storyline you're watching pregame, or what we're covering up to it. And then, of course, at home, is David Mirkovich healthy enough to play? Does he play? And if not, how does the rest of the team look? Because what if they got to play a couple games without David Mirkovich? Because if he's not playing in the exhibitions, I would imagine that he would be at least limited in the early action, and it takes some process to get him back. So that would be the major storyline of those games, and it'll obviously be the major storyline of the next 2 months for Illinois basketball. I do want to say one more note. Andre Iguodala II is on Baylor.
for you Central Illinois fans. So if you want to feel old, there's another part of it. The other part of the schedule that I thought you pointed out great in your piece, in your superlatives here, and people should go check that out at IlliniInquirer.com, there's actually some mid-major tests. You know, Brad has really leaned into the analytics of the net, right? And he should. Play the toughest teams and then play the easiest teams so that you can have this huge margin of victory, and that helps your net out really well. So a lot of quad four non-conference games. These bye games are just easy tests. Penn and, you know, Fran McCaffrey coming back after you beat him in the first round of the NCAA tournament. TJ Power's back. Like, that team is going to be frisky. They know you. Sam Houston State, number 180 in the Bart Torvik. Winthrop, 223 in the Torvik rankings. And Seattle at 151. So, well, listen, I think Illinois is going to handle these teams, Kyle. Like, these aren't the 320, 340 kind of teams that Brad Underwood has scheduled over and over again. So there are some mid-major games that could at least be a test for 20 minutes.
Yeah, and Western Kentucky as well might even be the best of all of them. They're number 107 on Bart Torvik and probably the favorite in Conference USA. So there's five of the seven home games. While you don't get a marquee home game, which is disappointing, that's kind of the one disappointing part of this conference schedule. Like, these will be decent teams. I don't think Illinois is going to be 36-point favorites against any of these teams. I think any of the five of them could be quad three games. You need to be within the top 160 of the net to be quad three instead of quad four, which doesn't make a huge difference, but it does boost your resume metrics. Beating those teams by 30 or 35 does a lot more for your metrics than beating number 345 by 30 or 35. So, and then just, you know, to
their first round NCAA tournament games too, right? Yeah. Like, these are teams you'd play in the first round.
They are. If you're a 1-2 or a 3 seed, like, and these actually could be the caliber of like 13 or 12 seeds, even a couple of them. But yeah, these are like that, those first round games that we see all too often. Sometimes these teams can hang with a team for 20-25 minutes, put a little game pressure on them. How do you respond to that? I'd anticipate Illinois wins all seven of these and wins all five of these games against these teams. But yeah, you could get at least a little bit more of a test than your average bye game, more of a test than what Fairleigh Dickinson and Eastern Illinois will be, which I would imagine Illinois will have a chance to be on 100-point watch in those and win by 35 to 40 points. Like, you'll at least get somewhat of a challenge here. I think sometimes you can just get into the dog days of non-conference too. There's going to be a lot of big tests, but also, like, you'll have to play solid basketball to come away with convincing wins in these games. You can't sleepwalk in these. So it's just an interesting little wrinkle in there. The home schedule is not obviously what fans would have wanted in the non-conference, but I think there could be at least a couple semi-entertaining games, even just for a half, among these teams. And yeah, getting Fran McCaffrey back at State Farm Center will be awesome. So that'll be a fun one there, the second game of the year.
All right, Kyle, I'm going to put this to you. Rank these high major games. Illinois, Texas Tech, and Texas Tech keeps adding from the waiver wire, apparently, the fifth-year waiver wire. We'll see if those guys are all eligible, if they get their courts, lawsuits go their way, TROs, all these things. But Texas Tech, head to them November 10th. Of course, Dre Gibbs Lawhorn playing for Texas Tech is a big storyline there. Duke, you and I will be in Durham on November 17th. I can't wait for it. We lost out on the COVID year, so Piper and I weren't able to get there, but you and I will be there, Kyle. Final Four and then Cameron Indoor in your first full year. Ooh. Pretty good. Pretty good there, Kyle.
Very good.
And then UConn, I mean, I know it's not home, but boy, what a huge matchup in Chicago with the United Center on Friday, December 4th. Then Sunday, December 20th, Missouri, always a great atmosphere. And then North Carolina in January, late January 30th, in Illinois' home away from home last year, Nashville, where they had a couple of big wins with basketball and football. So give me your number five game among those, Kyle. What would you go at number five?
I go Missouri at five. It's close. I consider North Carolina here, which is kind of crazy to say now that North Carolina could be the least challenging and least enticing game. I'm going to give the nod to Missouri. I just wonder, about that. I mean, first of all, Bragging Rights has had a lot of blowouts here in recent years. I think four of the last five Bragging Rights games have been decided by 20 or more points on either end. So we kind of need to see it. We need to see a really competitive game. 2 years ago when KJ hit a dagger shot there in the last minute, came down to the wire. But otherwise, it's been kind of a lot of blowouts here in Bragging Rights over the last 5 years. Missouri will be interesting. I think they could be a really solid team. I think it's all going to depend on, is five-star freshman Jason Crow Jr. a superstar right away? Like, he's as good of a scorer as there is in the class of 2026. But we'll see how much he translates to being the guy right away, because Missouri's kind of built their roster around him being the guy. That's a lot to put on a freshman. So if he's awesome, I think Missouri could be pretty good. If he takes some time, if he's inconsistent, you know, they have some interesting pieces. Jameer Jones, transfer from Providence. Bryson Tiller, who was solid at Kansas last year. Jalen Carey, who's just a bowling ball of a rebounding physical force in the front court from Tennessee, comes over. But there's some question marks there. It's going to come down to Crow. I lean towards them being fifth, but I think it is possible that come December 20th, that becomes a really compelling game. I think Missouri could exceed expectations, but I'll have to kind of wait and see to figure out how good they can be.
It says a lot about the non-conference slate that of the marquee games, Bragging Rights, which is right, always an awesome atmosphere. And it's always like a holiday kind of entree, or I guess appetizer. It's weird that that's number five. I don't disagree with you, though, because it's all about Jason Crow. And it's just that program is not quite, I mean, Illinois has taken off. Well, Missouri under Dennis Gates has been competitive, not like Kim Anderson era, but just not quite where Illinois is. So, yeah, I would think Illinois is going to be a heavy favorite there. But that game, you never know. That's what's fun about that game. So North Carolina at four. Why do you have North Carolina and new coach Michael Malone, one of the shockers of the offseason, as the number four marquee game?
I just really have no idea what they're going to be. And we'll have a lot of time to figure out what they're going to be, because you don't see them until January 30th. So we'll get a good idea of whether that game is like marquee quad 1A North Carolina as a legitimate national contender, or if it's kind of the North Carolina teams that we've seen here under Hubert Davis that have been solid teams but have underperformed and just hasn't been the same level of program that we've been accustomed to. Now, I think Michael Malone was a big swing of a hire, kind of a out of left field hire, but he's really, really good coach. Won an NBA championship with the Nuggets, and I think that's a big upgrade in the coaching department for them. And
it's just weird that Bubba Cunningham, he hires Bill Belichick and then does the same, like, pro. I think Michael Malone's more suited to do it college basketball, because it just feels like that and the NBA are a little bit more like each other. But still, it's a guy that hasn't dealt with college basketball before. You're throwing him into North Carolina. It felt like an odd hire, but he is a very good coach, obviously.
Yeah, it was an odd hire, especially given that it felt like North Carolina could have gotten a very big name at the college level, because you're still North Carolina. That's what, a top three or four job in college basketball right now. I think Michael Malone's a really good basketball coach. How is he as a program builder? That's what we'll have to find out. I think he's put together a pretty good roster. Like, the transfer class is good. I think you got three pretty high upside backcourt pieces. Terrence Brown was good at Utah last year. Neo Avdalis from Virginia Tech is a big playmaking guard, 6'7" or 6'8", who's kind of the point guard there. Should be interesting. He was kind of inefficient at Virginia Tech, but man, he's really talented. Matt Abel was a guy who was kind of on the fence about staying in the NBA draft or not. He comes back, transfer from NC State. So if those guys hit, could be a really good backcourt, could be a good team. Front court, I think Illinois will have a big advantage there. They brought in a really raw but really high upside five-star big man from Spain, Seyon Keita. Mm-hmm. 7'7" wingspan, uber athletic. The tools are off the charts, but incredibly raw, like, could get pushed around. I don't think he's draft eligible for two more years, so he's really young. Like, that could be a dicey situation at center there. That's where I think Illinois would have a big advantage. So they're fourth, slight nod ahead of Missouri, because I still think the brand, the Michael Malone I trust as a coach. I think the roster as a whole is slightly more complete than Missouri, and it's kind of a national spotlight game there. Yeah. Nashville showdown late January. I think the atmosphere of the game, we saw how much Illinois fans showed out in Nashville last year against Tennessee. I'd expect a 50-50-ish crowd there. Should be a fun environment. So I nod them slightly above the bottom spot.
Can I do a quick exercise with you? Like, if North Carolina would have hired this guy, would you have been like, yes, way better than Michael Malone? I mean, TJ Otzelberger's a no-brainer, right? Seems like they went after him a little bit, or at least was in the mix. Nate Oates would have been perfect there, I think.
Yep.
You could see him with like parquet. He wears that like parquet red kind of suit. Like, you could see the if he did the Carolina blue, if he did something like that. What if I told you Fred Hoiberg? Would you feel better?
Probably.
I would.
Yeah, Fred Hoiberg, really, really good college basketball coach, and he's been in it for the last, 4 years now at Nebraska, 5 years now. So, I think I'd feel better.
Scott Drew. Scott Drew feels like he should be older than he is. He's not. He's not that old. And it just feels like Baylor, do they have what it takes to compete in both those sports right now? I'm not sure they do. So I wonder if North Carolina could have called him up and been like, hey, we got the resources. You want to win another title, man. We got it for you.
It is funny how fast the opinion can change on a guy, because like 2 years ago, Scott Drew was like the name in terms of, and now the last couple of years has been a couple underperforming Baylor teams. He still, to his name, has one of the most impressive program rebuilds of any coach in college basketball, maybe the most impressive.
Because anyone took over a worse situation than Scott Drew at Baylor. I mean, we got to think back about what was happening. I mean, the murder scandal, all of that, like, was going on at Baylor, and he led them to a national title just a couple, you know, 10, 15 years later.
But I think he's kind of feels like he's maxing out at Baylor. I feel like he probably should
55 years
jump
old
for the next opportunity. I think North Carolina would have made some sense. I don't know if I'd sit here and be like, oh, slam dunk, way better than Michael Malone. But yeah, I think that would have worked if they ended up going that direction.
I'll throw two other names at you that I don't think are that exciting, but just I know what they are, at least. Like Porter Moser or Jamie Dixon. Would either of those, would you rather have Michael Malone?
Those don't jump off to me as like, yeah, give me those guys over Malone.
Like Calhoun might have been actually more interesting. Like a Jared Calhoun type of guy. All right. Or Casey Alexander, who went to Kansas State. Would have been interesting as well. All right, we did that. Number three on your list. I would imagine Duke and UConn are 1 and 2. So that would leave Texas Tech in number three.
It would. Yeah, I don't know if there's like a ton of surprises on this list. But yeah, Texas Tech is number three. That's going to be a really big first test for Illinois. That's the second week of the season. That's their third game. That's a true road game at a pretty underrated venue, United Supermarkets Arena in Lubbock there. Like, that place has really gotten going here since Grant McCaslin has gotten there. Texas Tech's been great at home under McCaslin. And now if Darion Williams and Donovan Atwell are granted eligibility via court injunction, which now I think both of those guys were in the Colorado case, so I think both of those guys will now have to refile in a state case to probably get eligibility. But
just exhausting, isn't it?
Just tell me who's on the team in November, and then I'll start breaking it down. It's exhausting to follow all of it. But JT Toppin's not going to play in that game. Graham McCaslin's already said his timeline is more middle of the season, like January conference play. But they could still be really good. I think their offense has a chance to be one of the better ones in the country. Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn is there. Great season at UNLV last year. Good for him to get another high major opportunity. He's probably going to be a starter and a big piece of what they do. They got Cruz Davis as well, transfer from the school that he came from. They were in the tournament last year, and now it escapes my brain where he came from. But he was a star for an NCAA tournament team last year at the mid-major level. And Darion Williams was a guy who was probably the best player on that Elite Eight team 2 years ago.
Hofstra.
That's what it was. Hofstra was in the tournament last year, and he was really, really good for them. I think he was the CAA Player of the Year.
20.1 points a game,
So they got a lot of offensive firepower. They got a lot of shooting. I think there'll be a little bit of a hole in the front court until Toppin comes back. That's where you hope Illinois can impose their will. But This will be a big offensive test for Illinois in a really hostile environment. First game for Illinois in the regular season against a big-time opponent. What does David Mirkovich's status look like in game three of the regular season? How built back up is he? Is he available? Is he able to play a full workload? Like, well, again, we'll have to monitor that. But this can be a really tough game. And if Illinois goes into Texas Tech and wins, especially once they get Toppin back, which I think will help continue to boost them later in the season, that will stand as a really, really impressive win at the top of Illinois' resume, and it should be a heck of a game.
If you told me David Mirkovich played the three exhibitions, I'd feel pretty confident about Illinois in that one. But if he doesn't start playing until the season, I think that's when it's going to be a really, really interesting one. All right, number two. I think this is actually, you know, like, I know you're going to Duke, you're playing at Cameron Indoor, but there's an argument about UConn and the United Center. So where did you go? Which one did you put number two here?
There is definitely an argument. It feels weird, like, even saying it. Like, the defending runner-ups, the team that has won the national title two of the last 4 years, and the team that is Dan Hurley on the sideline is two on Illinois' non-conference schedule. But I have UConn second.
I don't blame you, but can I make the argument for it?
Do it. Do it.
It's your home state. You are hosting UConn, right? Also, this is your white whale right now. I get it. It's Duke at Duke. Duke's going to be the number one team in the country, so it has to be number one on this one. But UConn is the white whale. This is the team you can't get past. Your two best teams. I'm getting so excited. I'm knocking over my microphone here, Kyle. This is the team. You can't get by them. And I understand two, 3 years ago in the Elite Eight, like, that team was a legendary team. Last year, you were better. Like, I thought you were a better team than UConn, except they were just a little bit more disciplined. They look like they'd been there before, and Dan Hurley is the best coach in the country. So for me, getting over that hump would be so meaningful to just beat that team. And it doesn't get revenge for the two NCAA tournament losses. It doesn't get revenge for probably last year's just annihilation at Madison Square Garden. But boy, I just think for this team and the psyche, you know, I don't think Illinois lacks for confidence, but boy, that'd be a confidence builder to be the first Illinois team of the last 3 years to finally beat UConn, which is not easy, even in Chicago with 20,000-something Illini fans there. I just think there's a case that winning that game could be as meaningful, but Duke will probably be the number one team in the country and is the most talented team in the country.
It's a great argument. It's an absolutely valid one, and it feels wrong not having them won. It's just – really, if there was any other team,
yeah, I agree,
I probably would have UConn one. Like, it's, you give me any teams in the country, and Duke and UConn would probably be 1-2. And if Duke wasn't on the schedule, UConn would probably be 1. I don't care who it is.
Like, you have Florida on there, but UConn would be 1. Yeah,
I would rank UConn 1. Yeah, even if you were going to Florida. Like, yeah. I'll get to Duke in a minute. Why I think that they're number one, and that game's just going to be unbelievable. But yeah, UConn is the one team that Brad Underwood and Illinois have not been able to conquer in this stretch of really high-level success for Illinois. Their two longest NCAA tournament runs in the last 20 years, over 20 years, have been ended by Dan Hurley and UConn. Yeah, the 2 years ago, that team was almost unbeatable. They beat everybody by double digits. But a 30-0 run is a 30-0 run. Wasn't a great moment for Illinois. Last year, I picked Illinois to win that game and go to the national title game. But Dan Hurley won again in the NCAA tournament. He's 20-6 in the NCAA tournament. Like, that's on pace to be an all-time record. This program, I think, is the best program in college basketball right now. And yeah, it is going to be in Chicago, which we saw in Illinois' return to the United Center last year against Alabama, how awesome that atmosphere was and how great Illinois fans turned out. I'd expect it to even go to a different level with UConn coming to town.
And even if you lose to Duke, right, but you beat UConn in Chicago, that'd be a big moment for the program for the rest of the season. You'd be solidified as a top three team in the country most likely at that point. But also, you love Dan Hurley, you hate him, most people hate him. Boy, he's like the NWO of college basketball. You got to respect him, right? But he's so good for the sport. And to beat the heel of college basketball, to keep using this wrestling term, like, what a great moment that would feel for Illini fans. So I think it's weird to have him too, but I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
Because Duke is number one team in the country most likely and just so loaded.
the reason I have them too is because I have a lot more questions about UConn's basketball team than I do Duke. I think UConn will probably be ranked in the preseason top five. Torvik has them number 11, so they're a little lower. Like, I do think there's a little bit of a range here of what UConn can be. Like, I think there is a top five argument for them. I also think there's an argument that, you know, maybe they're more in the 8 to 12 range in the preseason.
Because you're replacing their Reed. Yeah, you're replacing Reed, Caravan, like that front court mostly.
Yeah, the front court you have to replace. Love the backcourt. Silas Demery, awesome point guard. Braylon Mullins, I think he could have one of the bigger leaps in college basketball next year. Sam Vecenie has number 5 in the NBA draft next year. I think that backcourt will be great. Huge challenge for Illinois. Front court, you got to replace a lot. Like, there's just so much experience there. Alex Caravan and Terrace Reed were probably the two best players on UConn last year. Both those guys are gone. Do really like Najai Hines from Seton Hall. Like, defensive monster. He is. Like, Zvonimir Ivasic had a 12.9% block rate last year, which was 4th in the country. We talk about how astronomical that is. Najai Hines had a 16.4% block rate at Seton Hall last year. I think he's going to be pretty awesome for Dan Hurley there. But, like, you're betting on Nick Kamenia from Duke, who didn't really play a huge role for Duke last year. You're banking on some internal guys that have to step up their roles. Jaden Ross is probably going to be a starter. Like, but the I think thing there's is, more questions about the team.
The thing is, it's Dan Hurley, and he's going to get the most out of those guys. That's
they're going to be a very good team. I just don't think they're going to be quite as good as the team I have number one.
All right, number one, Duke. I mean, who's not playing on this team? There's like 11 guys that have NBA potential on this team.
The roster is ridiculous. You look at just probably the top 10 projected rotation players. You have 4 returners from last year's team, which was fantastic. Lost to UConn on a 35-footer. Otherwise, it would have been in the Final Four. I picked them to win it all, and they didn't. 4 returners from that team, Caden Boozer, Caleb Foster, Dame Sarr, former Illini target, and Patrick Gongba, who could be one of the better centers in the country. 4 five-star freshmen, Cam Williams, top 5 player in 2026, elite athleticism forward. That's going to be a matchup issue for Illinois. Deron Rippey Jr., really good point guard, top 20 player. Bryson Howard, wing, top 25 player, 2026. Joaquin Boumpje, who reclassified to 2026, and he's projected potentially as the number 1 pick in 2028 when he's eligible for the draft. 7'1" big man. By the way, they added John Blackwell as well at a transfer portal, top 3 transfer, and they added a pretty good depth big man in out of Belmont as well, and Drew Sharnowski, who's the best player on the Missouri Valley's 1 seed. That's the top 10 in Duke's rotation. Like, the biggest question about Duke is, how are we going to play all these guys? Which you have to answer that question, and, like, you got to get the buy-in from all these guys. But on the totem pole of questions heading into a season, that's the one you would want to have, is we have too many really good players. Got to figure out how to use all of them. I just think, I'd rank them number 1 in the preseason. I think they're going to be outstanding. You're also going to Cameron Indoor. That's like, that is, you know, that
only the Duke's third Illini team to do that, right?
Yeah, and the second one to do it in front of fans. Illinois 2-0 in Cameron Indoor. The one time they played in front of fans, they ended a 95-game non-conference home win streak for Duke in 1995. So
can't stop the streak now.
We'll see. We'll see. Illinois has another streak that they could end here, because Duke's won 32 in a row at Cameron Indoor, dating back to 2024. That'll be 35 by the time Illinois gets there. I just think going there, that'll be the best win in the country. I mean, that'll stand up as the best win in the country if you win it. That's the difference between a seed line. Like, that's the difference between you getting a 1 seed or a 2 seed come Selection Sunday. That atmosphere at Cameron Indoor is one of the best in the country. What a test for Illinois. And I think it would very clearly be the best win, definitely the best non-conference win, maybe the best win in general, Brad Underwood's tenure. Like, by net ranking, the best non-conference win that Brad's had, ironically, was probably his worst team of the last 7 years, that 2022-23 team when they beat UCLA in Vegas. Terrence Shannon went off. That team was number 4 in the net. I'd probably take the under 3.5 Duke net ranking. So beating that team on the road, I just think it'd be an unbelievable win. And even regardless of the result, what an opportunity, what a test, and what a treat for the fans. Probably getting to watch like 12 future NBA players play between the two teams. I have to have that one. As good as UConn is, I think that's going to be a whale of a college basketball game.
Listen, I made the argument for UConn. Doesn't mean I believe that argument for UConn. The other part of this, by the way, is even though Illinois does not have a marquee home game in the non-conference this year, I think getting Duke to State Farm Center on December 4th, 2027 is worth a year of not having a marquee non-conference. It's worth 2 years of just having that one. What a moment that's going to be when John Shire and Duke comes into town in a year and a half, Kyle.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's disappointing this year to not have a marquee home game. And I think Brad Underwood would tell you that he would like to have one every year. And Illinois has had one almost every year, just didn't work out this year based on kind of how these games came together, the neutral site games. And, you know, you return in the Texas Tech game and you signed up for a series against Duke and it just so happens that you're going there first. Like, it just kind of the pieces fell where they did this year. But yeah, you've had Texas Tech last year, Tennessee the year before, Marquette the year before that. You got Duke next year. Like, Illinois, that'll be a heck of a game next year. And Illinois is still most seasons trying to get big time opponents to State Farm Center. It just didn't end up working out this year. There's going to be a ton of big time games, but yeah, next year will be the one to look forward to. That could be one of the most highly anticipated games at State Farm Center in a long time.
Since Wake Forest, probably.
Probably will
be. Obviously, there's been some big time conference matchups, but non-conference, like, probably since Wake Forest in 2005. All right, if I'm going to grade this non-conference schedule, how they put it together, for me, it's no question an A, Kyle. And it just doesn't get a plus because you don't have that home game against those opponents. And this was not a Brad Underwood decision. Like, they have been trying to do this. From what I understand, there's not a lot of coaches that want to do home-and-home series because a lot of these non-conference slates where you get Fox or ESPN involved or these networks, CBS, you get big-time payouts, and you don't have to pay it back. Like, if Illinois goes to Arizona, Arizona gets paid when they come here, and then Illinois gets paid when they go out there. You just make a ton of money that helps your resources when you get those single kind of neutral site games. So I understand it's disappointing for fans, but Brad is trying to get those games. I think Duke is worth it. Just a lot of coaches aren't willing to do it right now, and it's hard when you don't know what your team's roster is going to look like from year to year. But Brad certainly isn't scared, and Brad has the stability and security, right, where he can just go schedule whoever he wants, and one loss isn't going to affect their NCAA tournament seeding most likely, or their NCAA tournament thing. And they're probably not, I mean, even if they get embarrassed, they've been embarrassed in some of these games, and it doesn't have a lasting mark. So Brad's one of those few coaches. I'll give John Shire a lot of credit, obviously Grant McCaslin a lot of credit, Tommy Lloyd has done the same thing, just loading up those schedules. So I would expect Brad to try and keep getting some of these. But what a schedule. I mean, how much fun is this going to be to watch?
Extremely. Yeah, it has to be an A. It's one of the tougher non-conference schedules in all of college basketball. Illinois did make effort to add a six-time major team to this, by the way. It didn't end up coming together, but
there was talk of Illinois, I'll give out a little scoop there. Like, Houston was close to a done deal. That would have been out in, I think, South Carolina, which would have been a fun trip around Thanksgiving holiday. So they replaced that with Western Kentucky. But yeah, they were working Houston. They were talking to some other big-time powerhouse teams, but just weren't able to get that last one done.
They were trying for a Black Friday game, didn't end up getting it. That'll be Western Kentucky at State Farm Center. But regardless, I mean, this schedule is fantastic. I mean, we went into even some of the nuances of it, of like, even your home games against mid and low major teams, those are going to be kind of interesting tests. But the top of the schedule, like, it'll be the first time, if UConn's ranked in the preseason top five, it'll be the first time under Brad Underwood Illinois has two preseason top five teams on their schedule. I think Texas Tech, if those guys get eligibility, probably a top 15 team in the preseason. North Carolina and Missouri have question marks, but they both have paths to be top 25 teams at some point this season. Like, you could be playing five top 25 teams on the schedule. I think almost undoubtedly that'll be five quad one games for Illinois, which are great opportunities. Obviously, the top of the schedule, you get those wins, seed line changing wins, huge wins that last at the top of your resume. You lose those games, you're not getting hurt. Yep. To your point, like there's no downside to scheduling like this. And for this team, Illinois has hopes of winning a national title, has hopes of getting back to a Final Four, testing yourself against other Final Four contenders and other NCAA tournament contenders is really, really important and does a lot of good for this team. And that's what Illinois should be doing when it has a team it feels like can be one of the best in the country. Like, you can win those games. You can beat Duke at Duke. You can beat UConn at the United Center. You should feel like you can win those games, not just playing them. So it's awesome to see Brad Underwood continue to schedule like this, because it's great for the fans, and it's great for the team, and it'll do a lot of good come March when Illinois is trying to set itself up for the best possible path to get back to a Final Four. Playing in these games and winning a few of these games is the biggest way you can help yourself do that.
Yeah, perfect. No notes. Kyle, since it was the first day of classes, figured you put you to work a little bit. So, I think we got enough of you in this hour podcast. Well done, man. Good to catch up with you, and appreciate the insight as always.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody have a great day. Take care of each other, and we will talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.